Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, the acclaimed and the sometimes controversial and dividing director Zack Snyder, and indeed his wife Deborah Snyder, on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. I also talked to the star of Rebel Moon, Sophia Boutella, the dancer turned actress. Neve O'Reilly reviews the new Dracula-inspired horror movie Abigail. Plus, Paddy Branock chats about his favourite movie. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to you all. I hope you're doing well. And the weather has broken and it's getting better. It's never going to rain again, as someone said to me during the week, but the weather has improved a bit, at least where I am. I'm sorry to talk about the weather, but it has been very, very, very bad. So it's nice that the rain is ceasing a little, in my experience, of the latter half of the week so far. But you are not here for a weather report, nor are you here to hear about me running. But I do want to mention the nice people in the DKIT 10K. That's the Dundalk Institute of Technology. I ran their 10K on Wednesday night of this week. Great course, very well organised. Lots of college students around. I like college students. They're nice people to deal with generally. It's a time of life where I think you're most pleasant, perhaps. If you had to pick a time in life where you're most pleasant, I think it's when you're in college. I know that sounds a bit random and unscientific, but in my experience, college students, they have a nice outlook on life. Anyway, this race I did in the DKIT had a lot of college students around helping out, and very nice people they were too. I ran in 49 minutes as well, which I was pretty pleased about because I haven't been doing that much running and I'm getting older. But anyway, so that was my week. And I just want to tell you quickly in cinema, how about this, right? There is something happening on Sunday, that's the 21st of April this week, called Generation Fresh. It's a unique screening event that's taking place at selected Omniplex cinemas in Galway, Cork, Dublin, in Rathmines and Limerick. It's 15 short movies by up-and-coming young filmmakers, 90 minutes, 15 movies, all rated PG, all for a fiver. That's pretty good going. So go to omniplex.ie for more information or freshfilm.ie to find out more information about a great cinema event. £5 to see 15 short movies. Generation Fresh, the future. Now, let's get down to the main event on this week's show.
Fighting together to defend something we love.
You must know you cannot win.
Gather every hunting rifle, every knife, every round of ammunition in the village.
That's impressive.
You stand between us and annihilation.
Tell me what we're trying to achieve here.
The same thing as the last time we met. I kill you.
That was a clip from Rebel Moon Part 2, Scar Giver. Rebel Moon, A Child of Fire, was the first movie from Zack Snyder that was on Netflix last year. And in it, Rebel Moon, we came across a gang of freedom fighters. Motley band of freedom fighters discovered by a pair of reluctant heroes. The farmer Gunner, played by Mikhail Husman, and the mysterious Cora, Sophia Boutella. The two decide to take action against the all-powerful Mother World Imperium after the very evil Admiral Atticus Noble, played by Ed Skirin, decides that he wants to come to this planet that they're on. He's the right-hand man of the cruel Emperor Belisarius, and they arrive on this village of Felt, and they become an occupying force, and there is a rebellion against them. Now, this kind of got ropey enough reviews. I think it was pretty entertaining sci-fi, to be honest. It's a lot like Star Wars, and Zack Snyder kind of had Star Wars in mind when he wrote it, and in fact conceived of it as a Star Wars movie originally. Now, Part 2 has, if you saw Part 1, at the end of it, something bad happens. And then in part two, we think everything's going to be fine, but evil is brewing and there is going to be an ultimate showdown between the freedom fighters who are on this planet of Velt against the mother world. And as I say, the leader of this rebellion, Cora, is played by Sophia Battaglia. She's a real badass who kicks serious ass and gets all these villagers to basically follow her. And there's all these kind of bounty hunters from different planets in the galaxy who come and try and fight against this Imperial warship, the Mother World Imperium. And it sounds very Star Warsy. It is. Anthony Hopkins is in it as kind of a robot who's now turned to the good side, and he's voicing this robot in it. So it's kind of a lot like Star Wars. And I think anytime you have, you know, good guys against bad guys in space, that's what it, like the villain in question, played by Ed Skirin, is brilliant in it, Atticus Noble. This is, as I say, from Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder divides people because he gave us movies like 300. He famously gave us a kind of new iteration of Superman in the form of Man of Steel. He did Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League. And then they had a new version of that, Zack Snyder's Justice League. He also gave us Watchmen. And of course, he also famously made Dawn of the Dead, the remake, in 2004. And people love his movies, and some people really don't like his movies and think that he typifies the worst of superhero movies. He's a very interesting guy. 300, that movie starring Gerard Butler from all those years, kind of brought in a new type of war movie. And a very interesting guy who works a lot with his wife. She's a producer on a lot of his movies, Deborah Snyder. So I spoke to the legendary Zack Snyder and his wife, Deborah Snyder, earlier in the week. And I began with my microphone not working.
We're off to a terrible start, but at least you're both smiling. Zack, if I might start with you, you know, I was thinking when I was watching, because I watched both the movies, even though I'd seen the first one again, and I was thinking of Star Wars, and I thought, God, I can't mention that to him because he'll be really pissed off that I'm invoking Star Wars. But then I was reading up, and in a way, your long history with this movie began with Star Wars because you were thinking of it as a Star Wars story. Is that right?
True. I certainly my love of sci-fi and everything comes from Star Wars, but I think that my feeling is that Star Wars is probably evoked because of the scale and then also because of, you know, the wide swath that Star Wars cuts through the sort of sci-fi universe. You can't really land on a planet with a big group of soldiers without thinking of Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And Deborah, in terms of the villain, Atticus Noble, I was thinking of another movie again, and you can tell me, but there was something. On one level, he looked a bit like a Nazi, but also I was thinking of Clockwork Orange a small bit. Was that in your guys' thinking at all?
Well, I'll tell you, I know that is a big influence of Zack. But I feel like we just wanted someone to be, scary, formidable. Also, he's charismatic, too, in a strange way.
Yeah.
I think you like watching him, even though you don't like the things that he does.
Yeah.
That Ed, when we started talking to Ed and talked to him about his performance, he just saw eye to eye of what that character, who that character was and how he was going to play it. And he's super scary. So
he is.
He is really scary. But also it just makes Cora that much stronger, because she goes toe to toe, you know, with him. And that was something that was really important to us. You know, it was important when we cast her that she was believable, that you believe that she was this assassin that, and you know, her physicality and her dance background really allowed her to, you know, do almost all of the stunt work herself. And as did Ed, and having them together when they were doing those scenes, especially the fight sequences, it was really intense on set.
I can imagine. And talking of casting, Zack, Anthony, not that you need to me to tell you how well your movie is cast, but Anthony Hopkins is brilliant voicing the person in question or the robot in question. And, you know, Anthony Hopkins is like the Washington Monument, certainly on this side of the water, in terms of like kind of acting royalty. One assumes that he's not going to do these kind of movies. But when you look at his career, you know, there's been all sorts of things. But did it take much persuasion? Did it say, did he say yes straight away? Or was there lots of meals and emails and Zoom calls?
You know, it's interesting. Scott Stuber had mentioned this idea. He's like, why don't you get Anthony Hopkins to do the robot? And we were like, yeah, sure. Yeah. We'll just grab Anthony Hopkins. That's right. But so we sent the script over, and I think he included a letter. So, you know, he read it right away, and
he liked it.
He called back. He called me out. They're like, "Oh, Tony wants to do it," and I was like, "What? He does?" And then I was able to jump on the phone with him, and you know, he's a dear man and very like passionate, very interested, and so it was really a cool conversation. That just seemed to be going, you know, we were on a collision course towards shooting it. And we did record him first before we did anything else in the movie. We shot Tony, his dialogue, and then we played on set, you know, with the actor who portrayed him, who was like, you know, 6'8", you know, like a giant. A giant guy played.
But it was super helpful because he got to like move the way from hearing Tony. So and then we had a chance at the end to have him redo some of the lines, although most of it is from the original recording that was before anything.
Yeah, I wanted him to get another. I wanted him to give him a second chance to like now, because we recorded him before we shot anything, and now see it with the fully. You know, rendered. And we did end up using a lot from the original recording because there was just some magical quality in it.
Wow. Fascinating. It's a brave new world that we can do these type of things, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Deborah or Zach, and you may have been asked this question a million times, but, you know, occasionally I meet couples who are in the business together. I'm married. I have some children with my wife. And the idea of, as much as I love her, of working with her, just seems crazy. I don't know how I do that. I'm wondering, do you set kind of ground rules for like, you know, at 6 o'clock, we don't talk about work, or maybe it's all wonderful, but it just seems like, I don't know how you guys do it.
Well, we talk about work a lot.
We definitely don't have any ground rules for that. Yeah. Cause we talk about work no matter morning, noon, night, on our anniversary.
Okay.
you know, like Christmas morning.
But okay, maybe you're going a little too
crazy.
I don't think I am. But it is, listen, it's incredible to have someone that you trust who's on your side, always in your corner every day, especially with the pressures of making these movies. For Zach and I, we met in the commercial world. So we never not work together.
Sure.
So it's just kind of how we do it. And, you know, our jobs are very different. So there's some days I'm dealing with the studio stuff. I'm dealing with things, and he's on set or he's working with the stunt people, and I don't see him all day. And then we come home. But it's also, I think, in an industry where you're traveling to different locations, to be able to do it together is just great, and to have a common goal that you both believe in, you know, because I think if you are invested in something that much and your spouse is not a part of that, it could be a little, you know, it could be alienating, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because in our company, I'm kind of the chief creative officer, but she's really the CEO. So in the end, you know, it's always good to have someone who's kind of managing, you know, the insanity in a really like clean and directed way, like where, you know, because I'm constantly ranting some ideas at her, and she's constantly having to sift through them and say like, yeah, maybe that one would be something to think about, and not the other thing that you were just talking about for 45 minutes.
Sounds great. I'd love to be there Christmas morning. Incidentally, my wife watched both these movies with me for work, and she's not a sci-fi person, and she really enjoyed them. So, you know, talking of marriages and working together.
Even though it's sci-fi, I feel like it's super grounded, and it's really stories about these characters, you know, thematically, the idea of this hero's journey of redemption, of finding where you belong, of finding something that you're willing to fight or die for. You know, I think these are very compelling to anyone, not just fans of, you know, sci-fi.
Absolutely. And we will help get that message out there. Lovely to talk to you both. Take care.
Thank you.
Zack Snyder and Deborah Snyder there talking to me about their working relationship. And I'm sorry I brought up my wife again, but see, I was trying to point out that she watches a lot of this stuff with me, even when she doesn't want to. And she enjoyed Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, and also Rebel Moon Part 1, which she watched this week as well with me, A Child of Fire. And that's what Zack Snyder and Deborah Snyder were talking to me about. And I should mention, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, is now on Netflix as of the 19th of April. Now, we're not done with it yet, because I was going to say up and coming, but she's arrived, well and truly. Sophia Batelli plays Cora, the principal hero in this, who is a reluctant hero. She comes to lead the rebels against the baddies in this, on this planet Veld, and she is an utter badass. She has her own history with the evil empire, which I'm calling them. They are the Motherworld Imperium is the actual name. As I say, Sophia Batella plays Cora in Rebel Moon, in both Rebel Moons. And she was a dancer and a very successful dancer. She was born in Algeria, went off to Berklee School of Music in Boston, and she became a dancer, danced with Madonna. And also Michael Jackson wanted her at one point for his last concerts, which never happened. Then she stopped completely and tried, and very successfully became an actress. She was first in Kingsman, The Secret Service. Then she was in Star Trek Beyond. She was also in The Mummy, the newer version of The Mummy, opposite Tom Cruise. She was in an episode of Modern Love, that great John Carney series on Amazon. She was also in a really strange movie called Climax, kind of improvised movie about all these dancers who take LSD, directed by the sometimes controversial Casper Noé. So I had a chat with Sophia Batella about Rebel Moon, The Scar Giver, and a bit more besides.
You know, it's funny when you read about your character, Cora, she's often referred to as a badass. I constantly see her, and I suppose she is, having watched both the movies and enjoyed them. How do you see that as a description of her?
She is a badass who does not want to be a badass, despite her will. And I found that actually, that was one of the appeal of playing the character. It's like, oh, it's quite fun to play a character that is so good at what she does and so capable, but wants ultimately none of it. She's running away from it. I thought that tug of war would be fun to play and see how this looks like on camera, how it feels. I thought, yeah, it was cool. Because very often when you see a film, like, I feel like you see the characters that are fighting, they're really good, they go for it. They're excited to go there. And like, I rarely see a character that really is, if anything, like maybe repulsed.
Yeah. So she's kind of a reluctant hero, I guess, in a way. Yeah. And, you know, I suppose people also talk to you about the training a lot, but it is very impressive, the badassness of it. Did it take you a lot, like, because I know you're a dancer by trade, but did it take you a long time to get into that, not just shape physically, but that kind of fighting space for doing this for so many months on set?
Yeah. It was, I adapted a lot what I've learned as a dancer to the discipline of it all, because I could have not done it otherwise, even starting from Kingsman when I, like over 10 years ago, but I'd never done any fight training nor stunt training. And I just I had to adapt with what I knew, and what I knew the most obviously was dancing. And that's something that that really helped me throughout all the stunt that I had to do in various films, especially in this one. This is the next hardest thing I've ever done since I was a dancer also.
Okay.
So like in terms of like having, I had to be disciplined and I had to be methodical.
You know, I was talking to Zach earlier and, you know, sometimes his movies, you know, they're seen as great action heroes movies and superhero stuff, but then sometimes people read themes into them that they're about other things. And I'm wondering if you think Rebel Moon, what the central theme is, or is there one? Maybe it's just really entertaining watching.
I think that will be a question that you'll have to ask various people individually. I feel a bit too close to the project to know what it generally is for others. But for me, I mean, for me, it's a journey to redemption.
Okay.
It's a journey towards freedom, essentially, and peace.
Okay.
I know it might sound cheesy, but that's what it is.
That's fine. Life is cheesy sometimes, you know?
It's nice. Cheesy is good, isn't it?
Absolutely. I love cheese. Tell me this. You mentioned being a dancer. I heard this thing that when you decided to become an actress, you, and I think you were telling Madonna about it just as a name drop because you used to work with her. But when you made that decision, you didn't work then for 2 years after you quit dancing. That must have been a scary kind of time when you were going, have I just made the worst decision of my life? Or is it just, you know, like musicians, you're driven to do this, so you didn't really have a choice. Like, you had to stop and try acting.
Like musicians, like painters, like anyone who is in, like, deeply inspired about what they do. At the time, I did not feel like I had much choice. Mm. I'm someone who's very, I'm led by my heart and I'm very sensitive. So I have to do what I feel. And I have to be honest with my emotions and face them. So I was led by that. And I didn't realize how scary it was. I think if I did, I would have maybe not done it. But I was on autopilot. I was like, oh, I have to do that because I feel that. So let's go. And in that way, it felt, it was a lot of effort. But it felt effortless to go towards having to exude those efforts and having to work for it. It felt natural, if that makes any sense. So, and I'm grateful that I listened to myself, because and it wasn't necessarily, like, those 2 years were quite hard, for example, and they were quite tumultuous, but I stayed at it, and I was really just deeply inspired, and I owe that to the inspirations that I got to have throughout my lives and my life and what I read, what I see, the dancing films, and I feel deeply inspired when I am inspired. So it's in a way I need to channel that.
Let me ask you this in closing. A very different movie that you were in and starred in was Caspar Noé's Climax. Yeah. And that movie is bizarre, and it's a really interesting film. But I imagine it's the most different to shooting Rebel Moon, because my understanding was it was filmed in 15 days. There was only two professional actors. That must have been a strange trip of a movie, if you pardon the pun.
Yeah, we shot in 15 days, and 2 months later we were at Cannes, and we had no scripts. And it was honestly an incredible experience that I'll never forget. I loved working with Gaspar and everybody on that set. And it was definitely an experience and an experiment. And it was not at all how I prepare compared to Rebel Moon. Like, I had two scripts. I like to be methodical with my script. I have to break it down. I love going back to read it over and over. And there I had to just trust spontaneity. I knew where I started, I knew where I landed. But anyway, the whole journey and the whole approach to that way of embodying a character, of making a film, is not to discredit whatsoever. I found it quite exhilarating and quite, the way I got to explore while making this film was very unique and different, but really rewarding in the end.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, listen, we're out of time. Continued success, and thanks for talking
to
me.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. Sophia Boutella there, talking to me about her acting life and her role in Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, which is now on Netflix as of the 19th of April. Up next, we go from streaming to the cinema and the big new release of the week, Abigail. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. Before the break, we were talking about the big streamer release, Rebel Moon, when I was talking to Zack Snyder and a few other people involved. We turn now to the cinema, and the big new cinema release is undoubtedly
Dracula's daughter's movie, Abigail, which is in cinemas from this Friday, the 19th of April. Delighted to be joined by freelance writer and movie buff, Niamh O'Reilly, who has seen it. Hello, Niamh.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So I'm being euphemistic, but maybe I'm not. This is a movie about Dracula's daughter.
Well, sort of. I think it's definitely an influence on it. But the guys behind this, the Radio Silence guys, I think are real horror movie fans.
Tell people who the Radio Silence people
so
are.
So we've got Matt Bettinelli-Alpin and Tyler Gillette. Yeah. And they have done the last two Scream films, which were wildly successful.
Scream films.
Scream, sorry, not Scream.
Not Scream, you're on Screen
we're
Time.
We're on Screen Time, yes. But they also did a brilliant, criminally underrated film from 2019 called Ready or Not.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
And I don't think many people
No, it's great.
It's so good. I would highly recommend go back and watch that. So, they're behind those films and they really know their horror. Mm. And they've, I think, been influenced by a lot of really good horror films. And this film, Abigail, definitely cherry picks from a few greats.
Yeah.
Dracula's Daughter, I would say, but also from Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay.
But also some other films like House on Haunted Hill. Bit of Usual Suspects in there, bit of Clue. Bit of everything.
Wow. Okay.
So it's great. And it stars Alicia Weir.
Who is Irish, born anyway.
She is Irish, okay. She's from Dublin as far as I know.
The full Monty then,
Full Monty. The name mightn't be familiar, but her face will be. She starred in Matilda a couple of years ago, beat out hundreds of kids.
The musical one.
The musical. Yeah. Hundreds of kids to get that role. And she was also in Wicked Little Letters recently. She was on the Forbes 30 under 30 list, I think. I mean, she is smoking hot right now. And she's brilliant in this.
And what age is she?
She's like 14.
Yeah.
She has the world at her feet.
So what's the plot?
Alicia Weir plays Abigail and a typically normal, 12-year-old girl who likes ballet and stuff. And she is kidnapped by these band of bad guys who have been charged with going in, kidnapping her from her home, taking her to a creepy sort of mansion, staying holed up in the place for 24 hours until her father, who's a very wealthy businessman slash potential criminal baddie, pays up a very large ransom. So it's relatively simple on paper and the whole thing goes to plan very well.
Okay.
So as I said, the first half an hour is a heist film. They go in, they get her, everything's sweet. They arrive at this fairly creepy mansion and the bad guy who's in charge of the operation is Giancarlo Esposito, who you'll know from Breaking Bad, the chicken man. So he's there and he says, look, happy days, sit back, relax, keep an eye on the kid, have a few drinks. We'll see you in the morning when the father pays up. But things don't go to plan, of course.
Because
it's not a spoiler to say this. It was in the trailer.
Yeah.
Abigail is not a normal little girl. She is a vampire.
Yeah.
And a very, very good one.
And possibly related to Dracula?
I won't go into that.
I
won't go into that. There is a wonderful cameo at the end of this film that was really satisfying if you are a vampire film slash TV show aficionado.
Fair enough.
So people will like that.
But we can definitely say she is a vampire.
100% and a very old vampire.
Okay.
She has been around a long time. Things get bloody. Things get bloody very, very quickly. And if you've seen these guys' films before, you know that they don't shy away from gore. And I mean, buckets of it. But it's all done in a very tongue-in-cheek sort of way. Like it leans into the dark humour very, very much.
Okay.
So it's not scary, really. There's some jump scares, but it's more thrilling than anything else.
Okay.
It's funny. There's some really funny moments in this.
And Alicia Weir, is she very good?
She's brilliant. And I mean, completely.
Because she's doing some horrid stuff for a 14-year-old.
Horrid stuff, but she's having the time of her life. I mean, she is literally chewing the scenery. But someone else who's having the time of their life in this film is Dan Stevens. He plays the leader of the baddies, and he's a real dirtbag in this. And he's great at being a dirtbag, I have to say. It's like he's on a mission to erase cousin Matthew from Downton Abbey, from the memory.
It's funny you should say that because I interviewed him a few years ago for Eurovision Song of Ice and Fire, that Will Ferrell movie. And always going fine. I asked him about Downton Abbey and I could see his face go, oh, not again. But anyway.
I think he'd like to get away from that.
Yeah.
But he's very good at being a bad guy.
Mm.
So he's good in this. He's got like the Jersey accent. Melissa Barrera is also one of the bad guys, but she's kind of, I guess, the morally best bad guy in this. And she's sort of charged with looking after Abigail at the start of the film. And, you know, she's not going to let these baddies kind of hurt this innocent little girl that she appears to be at the start. So it's great fun. I really enjoyed it, but there are a few niggles.
Okay.
Firstly, there are a number of red flags from the moment these guys walk into this creepy mansion. I mean, like waving red, flashing red flags in their face. I mean,
that things are not going to go well.
I mean, come on. Okay. It makes them look as if they have zero brain cells to rub together. Okay. And there's a few plot holes in this which really annoyed me. I was almost like shouting at the screen going, oh my God, lads, will you just look left or look right? So those little things did annoy me. And also the whole reveal of Abigail being a vampire. Like, there's kind of a build up to that in the film for the first half an hour. I feel very redundant because it's been given away in the trailer.
Yeah.
I really wish, it's not a criticism of just this film. I think films in general give far too much away in the trailer.
Yeah.
You know?
Angus Cloud, the now sadly departed Angus Cloud, is in this as well, playing what role?
Yeah, so he's one of the bad guys. He's essentially the driver.
Right.
And he's good in it. It's really quite sad. Another young guy who, you know, had a long career in front of him.
Absolutely. So this is a thrilling enough thriller with a few plot holes.
Yeah, it is thrilling. But I think it's not scary. Like,
right.
I mean, so.
But it's not trying to be, is it?
I don't think so. I guess it depends what your definition of horror is. I mean, a film I saw recently, Civil War, I found much scarier than this.
Yeah.
This is thrilling. But there is a lot of gore in it. I mean, there are literally bodies exploding and like blood going like for miles in this. But it is, and there's lots of twists and turns in the story. There's alliances made, you know, people betray one another, and you sort of find yourself cheering for the bad guys at times in this. I mean, Alicia Weir is so good in this. You kind of find yourself, you know, she's created this kind of very morally grey area character that you do kind of cheer along with, you know, halfway through. And as I said, Dan Stevens is brilliant in this as well. And he's a baddie you love to hate.
Okay.
And Melissa Barrera is great. If you've watched the other Scream films, you know, she's quite playing a similar sort of role in this.
So what would you say stars-wise for Abigail?
I'm going to say a very solid 3.
Okay.
I like the tone that these guys seem to strike in terms of horror. And I think if you're a horror fan, it's nice when films blend the dark comedy with the horror.
Yeah.
It's hard to do because sometimes films try and do that and they end up being sort of too funny, like a Shaun of the Dead.
And it's not, it tries to be two things and it's not anything in the end. Yeah.
So they have this line really, really well mapped. So for me, I mean, it is very similar to Ready or Not.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of feels like maybe a spiritual sequel to that in some ways. So I know people will criticize it and say, was there really a need for this? I mean, it's not that much different, but I enjoyed it. I mean, it was an hour and a half or hour and 45 minutes of being out of myself, of just enjoying these thrills. And it is thrilling.
Yeah. So 3 stars, a solid 3 stars
for
Abigail.
Definitely.
In 30 seconds, just as I have you, you mentioned Civil War. We didn't review that last week in the show, but I did briefly mention because I was due to interview Alex Garland, as is the way of these things, it didn't happen. But I thought Civil War was great.
Really good.
What would you say stars wise for Civil War, which is still in cinemas, which is all about a civil war in modern America?
And can I just say, it's one you need to see on the big screen.
Yeah.
The use of sound in this film is
terrifying.
So effective.
Yeah.
I did jump in my feet several times with the sounds that I was not expecting.
And Jesse Plemons, he's only in for about 5 minutes.
But
he's terrifying.
Makes such an impact in this film. And I think, you know, because these events perhaps aren't too far away from what could happen. You know, who knows? And happening in a country like America, where you are not used to seeing scenes like this, it really affects, very, very affecting.
Yeah.
I'd say 4 stars.
Excellent.
And 1 for the big screen, definitely.
Yeah.
Don't wait for the small screen. It'll lose its impact big time.
Doubling up on your workload this week, but I did want to mention Civil War because I thought it was great as well.
Happy.
I did think the end was a little predictable. But
I did,
that said,
I didn't like the end, I have to say.
You could see it coming from the opening shot,
could,
I felt.
Completely.
But the ride up till then
it's
is a hell of a
it.
Ride. So I agree with your 4 stars for Civil War, which was last week. But this week, a solid 3 for Abigail, courtesy of Niamh O'Reilly. Niamh, thanks.
Thank you.
Who's the girl?
You don't need to know her name.
I don't care about her name. Whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer. Look, you're safe here. And to be completely certain that you can't be tracked, I'm going to collect your cell phones.
Nobody's tracking me.
I'm not taking any chances. Give them over.
Keep the doors locked and the girl isolated. See you in 24 hours. my lovely pack of rats.
A clip there from Abigail, and that was Giancarlo Esposito doing his bad guy. And Niamh O'Reilly gave it 3 stars, a solid 3 stars. And Abigail is in cinemas from this Friday, the 19th of April. Up next, Paddy Branock on his favourite film. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. It's that stage of the week where we talk to someone well known about their favourite movie. Paddy Branock is one of Ireland's most acclaimed directors, whose previous movies include everything from Viva and Rosie to the rightly lauded and very celebrated on this show, I Went Down. He was on our TV screens last year and will be again this year directing the great RT drama, The Dry, starring Roisin Gallagher. I'm delighted to say he joins me now to talk about his movie, one that has never been chosen on this show. Paddy, hello, how are you?
Very good, yourself?
Not too bad at all. So listen, tell our listeners your favourite movie.
Well, I have to say I've lots of favourite movies, but my favourite movie that I've chosen is A Matter of Life and Death.
Wow.
Roland Pressburger, 1946 film.
And it is your favourite movie, why?
Well, I think the reason why I chose it, it's quite personal in a way. I think it's the first film I saw that I began to think of films as cinema, or it affected me in a way. So why is this film interesting to me in a way that's more than I felt before when watching films? And it happened sometime, I think I must have been in fifth or sixth year in secondary school, and I came home from school, and at that time you'd get movies in the afternoon, sort of movies that had been discarded a bit on ITV maybe, and I watched it and I just sat down and started watching it, and it drew me in, and I felt there was something more going on in the film. And I couldn't explain that. I didn't fully get it, but I just felt this is a film that I don't think I would have liked, and it drew me in some way.
We better tell people what it's about. It's 1946. The great Mr. Niven is a pilot in World War II who's about to jump out of a plane.
Yeah, which apparently there's some kind of truth in the story as well. There was a couple of incidents where fellas jumped out of planes and survived, you know. So there was some truth, which I was surprised to find out. But yeah, he's returning from a bombing mission, and his plane has been incapacitated, and everyone else on the plane has been killed. And he makes a mayday call, which is picked up by an American, which is significant, radio operator, and they kind of fall in love during that phone call, during that radio call.
My understanding is that it was, and this gets to kind of the nub of the movie, it was retitled for American audiences A Stairway to Heaven, because they didn't want the idea of death or anything in it.
Yeah, I think it was two relatively inexperienced studio executives in America pushed that, and or lawyers who worked with the distribution company, and they said that no film with death in the title had ever done anything at the box office, which I think Pressburger argued that there was a film called Death Takes a Holiday, and they said, well, it's about death not being there, so it took a holiday, so it doesn't count. But they wanted death in the title, because remember, the context of this film, it's coming out of this Second World War, huge trauma, huge instability, I suppose huge big existential questions in people's minds after the war. And the context of death was a huge part of that, you know, and the survival, I suppose, after the war. The film was shot in 45, so it was, you know, just after probably the war finished. Mm. And it's kind of interesting as well. One of the other things about it that I'm interested in is 1946, there was a lot of really good films in 1946. You know, The Best Years of Our Lives, The Big Sleep. There's quite a lot of films that I would like and appeal to me. And they all came out in the same year. And I think that must have to do with whatever the zeitgeist was going on. It's a Wonderful Life was another one. The zeitgeist that was going on at that time, you know?
Yeah. Where, Post-World War II.
Post-World War II. And one of the things with A Matter of Life and Death, that it finds in that context and dealing with a lot of the, you know, maybe weightier issues around then, it finds a way to do that with a lightness and an optimism, you know? And I think that's one of the things that kind of drew me to it a lot, you know, that it's very vital.
And we should just, you know, we don't want to give spoilers because people might want to watch it, but it also involves trips to heaven, right? I mean, this is a supernatural movie in some sense.
In some sense, but there's a question, is it heaven? I think one character says, Richard Attenborough actually says, he comes into it and he walks into the heaven sequences and he says, it's heaven and a clerk in heaven. Heaven has a sort of bureaucratic quality to it and a legalistic quality to it. And she says, many people would think it was heaven to be a clerk, you know? So it's undercut and it isn't really mentioned as heaven. So it is the afterlife or another world.
Yeah.
And the question is that a manifestation of an illness that David Niven's character has, where he's battling with a brain trauma, or is it in effect supernatural? And there's enough ambiguity, to suggest it could be either way. So it manages to walk that line quite well, you know.
Yeah. When I was reminding myself of it this morning, I happened to see a video of Martin Scorsese talking about it and how deeply affected he was by it. And then Mark Kermode also popped up, on these YouTube clips. They give you the next thing. And he was raving about it as well. You tell me, it's a movie you love, but it seems maybe there's a Russian doll quality to it or something. There's a lot to take out from it. And as you point there, interpretation, like it seems to stay with people and particularly film buffs.
Yeah, there's some strange quality in it, a poetic quality that isn't, like, that's a bit indivisible. You know what I mean? That it's just something that is in the way of their storytelling that captures you. And in some way, I suppose that's beguiling and allows them to talk about things like the last act in it, or the, you know, large part of the last act is a sort of courtroom drama in heaven. Very abstract, and the themes that are dealt with in it are very, you know, political and historical and about identity and all of those. It's kind of weighty sort of universal stuff that they managed to do, but yet position it in a very personal way. And I suppose, you know, it's one of the things that the opening of the film has this journey, starts in the cosmos and gradually gets closer and closer to the world, and then gradually gets closer to Europe, and then zooms into Peter Carter, the David Niven character's plane, as he's about to crash. And it sort of goes from this universal general to the very particular. And then later in the film, there's a kind of mirroring version of that where we're inside his brain, and we're there's a similar camera movement from sort of a depiction of inside his brain that ends up in heaven, and it goes back out to this most universal sort of idea. And that's something that they managed to straddle in a kind of light, with a lightness and with a humor to it, but yet you feel there is something that's being alluded to that's greater than just the ordinariness of their story, you know.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, look, the point of this slot is to, you know, encourage people to watch movies they may have missed, so I think you've certainly done that. A Matter of Life and Death, his favorite movie certainly for choosing in this slot. And this may depress you, Paddy, but the whole thing is available to watch for free, it seems to me, legally or otherwise, on YouTube, and that's A Matter of Life and Death. Paddy, we spoke last year for the first season of The Dry on RTE, and we did the interview twice because there was an epic fail with News Talk Technology and you kindly agreed to do it the next day. The second season of The Dry, starring Roisin Gallagher, is about to launch in RT imminently next month or sometime like that. It's already been out in the UK and it's getting, and you can summon all your false humility that you can, but it's getting rave reviews.
Yeah, no, the reviews have been fantastic, and there was particularly one great one in The Guardian, and they just, it was lovely to read it, that people get it and kind of that there was an enthusiasm for it, you know. So, so it seems to have gone down very well and also has been compared very well with the first series. Mm-hmm. Which is always that kind of thing. Can you deliver the second one? You know, and it's a great Nancy, you know, who wrote it, did such a brilliant job expanding the series, I think, keeping it very much on track with the tone and the world that we're in, but yet spreading it to a few of the other characters that are in it, you know.
Yeah, well, we look forward to seeing that soon. Obviously, as you know, I'm a fan of what you do. Is there another movie coming our way from you, or is TV where your head is at the moment?
Well, I think there's movies that I'm developing, and I hope to do one of them soon, you know. But it isn't financed yet, so we're waiting. Films are harder at the moment, you know, to
sure.
get going. But there's definitely, it's where my heart is, you know.
Sure.
So cross the fingers. But yeah, no, there's a couple of very interesting ones. One I'm working on with Roddy Doyle, and another with Mark O'Halloran, and another with Conor McPherson. So I'm kind of working with three great writers. So hopefully one of them will come to fruition soon.
Getting the band back together. Well, listen, don't use the phrase developmental hell, because it sounds like you could be coming out of that. His favorite movie is A Matter of Life and Death. Paddy Branagh, thanks a million.
Thanks a million, John.
And what should happen to a man who jumps from his aircraft without his parachute?
How do you know?
But it is I who am telling you, my friend. It is I. Your time was up, but they missed you because of your ridiculous English climate. I am French.
But what do you want now?
You, my friend.
What for?
To conduct you.
Where to?
To the training center.
Training for what?
For another world.
You don't mean...
But, my dear friend, that is just what I do mean.
David Niven, opposite Marius Goring there, in A Matter of Life and Death, the favourite movie of Paddy Branagh. That is it for this week. My thanks to Anne-Marie Kane, who helped out on the show. If you want to get in touch at any stage, John_Fardy is my Twitter handle, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. I'll just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. Have a safe week ahead. May the rain continue to stay away. And I'll talk to you all next week.